going to move ahead. Okay, we're at Chaf, we're at Vav Amud Aleph in Sota on the bottom at the wide lines. Again, to quickly review, to make it simple, when our Mishnah said certain women no longer eat truma, one of the cases was if two witnesses testify that she was tamei, she doesn't get to eat the truma. Obviously, that case cannot be where they testified before she drank the water, because then, of course, she would be tamei. The case could only be where she drank the water and looked healthy, and therefore the two witnesses are still believed in spite of the fact she looks healthy. So now there's two ways to understand that Mishnah. Rav Sheshes, who is of the opinion that if there are two witnesses who saw what happened after the seclusion but never testified, he maintains the waters won't work. And therefore he holds that the case of our Mishnah is where she drank the water and there were two witnesses who had seen it, and therefore, either according to the Chamim or according to Rebbe, she doesn't begin to fall apart. So she looks healthy. She looks healthy, and yet the two witnesses come and later say she's guilty. So she's out. Why? She drinks, she's healthy, because if two witnesses saw it without us knowing it, the waters don't work. And that's the way Rav Sheshes learns the Mishnah. Rav Yosef says, no, it could be if two witnesses saw it, that the waters would work. So how could it be that two witnesses come later and she was healthy and they saw what's happening? Why didn't she die? Why should we believe them? So he explains the machlokas of Rebbe and the Chachamim. Rebbe says she will begin to fall apart, but the Chachamim say her merits will hold her off, but she doesn't begin to fall apart. And the Mishnah will go like the Chachamim, who say that even if she has merits, she doesn't fall apart. And therefore, when she drinks and she looks fine, So what's going on over? So we believe the witnesses, not because the waters would not work. The waters could work, but she must have merits. So it comes out, according to Rav Sheshes, the reason why the waters didn't work was there was witnesses who saw what happened. According to Rav Yosef, it's not because witnesses saw what happened. If witnesses saw what happened, the water would work. So how's our Mishnah coming there, two witnesses? According to Chachamim, that if she has a merit, the merit shall look normal, and then 3 years later, she will die. Rav Sheshes didn't want to learn that way because he holds that the Chachamim say that if she has merits, she won't die, but right away she'll begin to deteriorate, but will die a different death. So if she's already deteriorating, then that means she was already guilty. So that is the machlokes. So now, the Gemara is going to challenge Rav Sheshes a number of times based on his opinion that he's not about the fact that if witnesses see what happens, the waters don't work. Remember, we said there's a third rabbi. Remember, the Chachamim say if a woman has merits, it could delay her punishment. Either according to Rav Sheshes, she immediately deteriorates and dies of a different death, or according to Rav Yosef, that she looks perfectly healthy and then just drops dead later on. Comes on Rav Shimon, who argues on both of them. Rav Shimon Omer. Rav Shimon, let's back it. I skipped. Masiv Rav Shimi Barashi. Rav Shimi Barashi asks on Rav Sheshes from the next Manda Omer. Rav Shimon Omer. Rav Shimon says he disagrees with this entire concept. He says, Ein schus toilu b'mayim amarin. He says, if a woman has merits, it does not interfere with the waters. He disagrees with the rabbis, he disagrees with Rebbe. This whole notion, he says the merits will not suspend the punishment, and she will die immediately, finished. Now, and he explains why. Vimata omer schus toilu b'mayim amarin, because if you say that water will hold off the lethal effects of the bitter waters, you've made a galechter of the whole thing. You've undermined the whole spirit of the waters in the mind of all women who drink. Right? Because the whole point is the suspected sota is tested by the water. But now you figure, now normally, remember, if a woman knows, if she knows that if she's guilty, she's going to die by drinking this water, there's a high likelihood that sooner or later she's going to confess before she drinks the water, right? Right, I mean, unless she's a Muslim ISIS person, where she's willing just to die. But a normal person wants to live. So if she acted immorally, she would, and if she knows the waters are a true test, well, then you're going to eventually confess. It's a motivation to confess. But if you know that they're merits, and if they're merits, the waters won't work, then every Rush always thinks they're a great guy. So I did merits. I remember I once gave some tzedakah to somebody, whatever. So they're always going to assume that the little that they did good in life will be a merit, so that won't push them to confess, and therefore we're going to give the water. And the water is not such a simple thing. Remember, one of the aspects of giving the water is you write a whole thing on parchment with God's name, and you scratch it out, and you're scratching out God's name to put it into the water. It's not a simple thing to just say, oh, you just have her drink the water. So what's going to come out is, number one, you've made a whole joke of the whole thing. And also, Vatamosi Shemrala Taharashasasu, you'll also, people will speak badly about a woman who drinks and nothing happened. They're going to say, hey, you think she's so innocent. She probably just gave a little tzedakah and pushed it off. We'll see what's going to happen. But then again, who knows? Going to come, you'll never know. She dies a few years later, but that doesn't mean anything. Vehain Omer, and people will say about this woman, Timaeus Hayu, that they were Timaeus. So there you see that Rav Shimon disagrees with this whole concept. So what does this have to do as a question on Rav Sheshes? So the Gemara continues. Wait, I'm not finished with his point. But people will say, even though she drank and was Tahora, they're still going to cast aspersions on her, because they're going to say, Ela Shetala Lahen Schus. They're going to say she must have had a merit. So therefore, Reb Shimon's position is unreasonable to say that a merit holds a sota's punishment in abeyance, because it would undermine the whole concept of a sota. All right, that's his opinion. Now, Mora now is going to ask a kasha on Reb Sheshes. Remember, Reb Sheshes says what? If there's witnesses who saw what happened, then the waters don't work. That was his whole point. The waters don't work. V'im Isa, and if you're going to hold, that yesh lo eidim bebedina sayam. So if you're going to hold that, if there's witnesses across the ocean, but they saw it, the waters won't work, then the same problem that Reb Shimon has with mitzvahs delaying it should be the same problem if there's witnesses who see it, because the same aspersions would be cast. If you hold like Reb Yosef, that even if witnesses see, the water helps, works anyway, oh, there's no aspersions to that. They're going to say, well, there must have been witnesses. What would make a difference? But according to you, Reb Sheshes, if there were witnesses who saw it, the waters don't work. So just like Reb Shimon says, if we're going to allow merits to negate the effects of the water, it casts aspersions on the water. If you're going to let a witness who saw it, who happens to be across the ocean, it's going to cast aspersions on the water as well. And that's what he says. Yesh la eidim v'vnei sayam. If you're going to say that witnesses across the ocean, it will also cast dispersion on women who drink and come out okay, because people will say, oh, you know what, there's probably some people overseas, maybe that's why she's off the hook. And they're going to say, really, this woman is defiled. But rather, but there's witnesses on the other side of the ocean. In other words, once you're opening up any crack in the Pandora's box and say, you know, there is a situation where the waters won't work, so automatically people will assume that any woman who came out clear is going to say, you know, there must have been some witnesses who were in China right now. So that same logic of Reb Shimon in his position can be used against Reb Sheshes the way he learns, and that's what the footnote says. For the same reason, Reb Shimon rejects the notion that merit protects from the effect of the bitter waters, because this would undermine the intended impact of the sota procedure. He would similarly reject Rav Sheshes' assertion that overseas witnesses render the bitter waters ineffective. We have shown then that according to Rav Shimon at any rate, Rav Shimon's rule is untrue. So the Akasha from Rav Shimon, okay? To which Rav Sheshes will answer, very simple. Le Rav Shimon, comrade? Are you saying your question according to the opinion of Rav Shimon? Le Rav Shimon... Mizishus lotalia ain't a nami lotalia. Reb Shimon's a different rabbi. Reb Shimon would disagree totally with my opinion anyway. In other words, why according to Reb Shimon, you're certainly correct. He says merits don't suspend that. You're right. Great. He argues on Rebbe. He argues on the Chachamim. So guess what? He'll argue on me too. So who cares? I don't hold of him, and he doesn't hold of me. In other words, The whole point is, at the end of the day, Reb Sheshes is Reb Shimon. He's arguing on two heavyweights. He's arguing on Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He's arguing on the Chachamim, who say that merits do defer things. Okay, so we have a Reb Shimon in the world. So great. So Reb Sheshes said, guess what? I don't hold a Reb Shimon. When he asked me a kasha, Reb Shimon, you're right. Reb Shimon already argues on bigger people than me. So it's a question on me that he won't agree with me. He doesn't agree with Rabbi. He doesn't agree with the Chachamim. Right? That's what he says. Reb Sheshes, however, stated his ruling according to the opinion of the rabbis, who maintain that merit does suspend the punishment, and are not concerned that this would diminish the dread of better waters or defamed innocent women who have survived the test. So when he asked me a kasha from Reb Shimon, good, you're right. Reb Shimon don't disagree with me. Great, I don't hold a Reb Shimon. My whole supposition, the way I understand the Mishnah, is learning it that both Rebbe and both the Chachamim say that punishment is deferred, And therefore, because of merits. So it can also be deferred. They're not worried about the aspersion. So I'm not worried either. So what, he drank me a cup? So that was one question that got knocked off. Next question on Rav Sheshes. Masiv Rav. Rav is going to ask another question on Rav Sheshes from another segment of the Mishnah that was mentioned. And now you got to be a little patient, I believe. There's a number of cases coming up, but the real question isn't coming until the last case. So there's a number of cases that really are not germane to the question, but they're bringing down the entire Mishnah. We just have to be patient here. So now they're going to talk about the next issue. The next issue is, well, when the woman is the sota, there's a number of korbanos that are brought as well. One of them is the minchas sota. She brings a meal offering made out of flour. Okay?
Husband,
whatever. It's brought for her. She brings it.
It's for her.
Yeah, she has to bring this offering. Okay. And the question is, at a certain time, the mincha becomes holy. And we'll see exactly when. Okay, when you put it in the bowl and you designate it, it becomes holy. Question is, what happens if we get to a point where she, and now normally happens is if she sticks to her guns, you bring the mincha, then she drinks the water, and then we see what happens. But what happens if after we've made the mincha holy, she confesses, or something to that effect? So now what happens to that mincha? What do we do with it? Can't bring it anymore. It was kind of sanctified, quote unquote, prematurely. So what do we do with it? That becomes the question, and there's a number of situations and a number of different halachas that exist over here. So that's the idea. So they say, Ve'elu sheminachoseyam nisrafas. The following is a list of the minchas that the sota brings that are burnt. Okay? Where the mincha becomes unfit for offering, either because it can't be offered or it can't be redeemed, and therefore just burnt on the ash heap at the side of the mizbeach. Even though it was made holy and it was a mincha, we got to burn it. We'll see. Now, there's two options. Sometimes you can just be pode, you can redeem it. And you could just give money and it could be, you don't have to waste it. You give money to the base of mix, you can redeem it. Sometimes you have to burn it. So these are the cases where this mincha offering has to be burnt. And we're moving on now to the top of the next page. So let's say, Let's say now, to make the mincha holy, you take the flour and all that, and you put it in one of the ministering bowls. There's holy bowls in the Beis HaMikdash. When you put all the stuff in the bowl already, it's been sanctified. Now, what happens after it's been sanctified? Ha'omer es t'mani. So finally, she confesses before she drinks. The whole procedure is designed to make her confess if she was guilty. It's a whole long, we'll see in the next mishnah, it's a whole long protracted procedure that's meant to wear her down so that she will give in and admit if she is guilty. So let's say she admits that they already made the meal offering sanctified by putting it in the bowls, but she went and confessed. So Omeris Tamea Ani, that's one example where the only recourse we have to do with the flour offering is to burn it. Okay? Okay, that's basically everything that's there. Case number two. Ushabala Adim Shitmea. And witnesses come and testify that she was defiled. Okay, before she would drink the water. Witnesses came, she's in the Beis HaMikdash. We already mixed the meal offering. It's in the bowl. It has been sanctified. But now witnesses come before she drinks the water and says that she is defiled. So the procedure is stopped. The mincha cannot be brought. Remember, the whole point of the waters isn't to punish a guilty sota, but meant to find out the truth. Once two witnesses come before she has to drink the water, then that's it. There's no point in having her drink the water. Look at footnote 3. The sota's mincha can be offered only as long as it can effectuate the examination of the bitter waters. Once it becomes clear that the waters will not be administered, however, the offering of the mincha cannot proceed and is disqualified. You only bring that mincha as long as we think we're still going to have her drink the waters. Once we know she's not drinking the waters, we don't do that. So now we have two cases. All right? So I'm sorry, this is not the long one. The next one's the long one. So now the question is like this. So it says when the witnesses come. Okay, now I kind of said a pshat, but let's see what's going on over here. So the asu edim, the case of the witnesses come, Amos, when do they actually come that we halt the ceremony? And so when did these witnesses come and say this? Ilema, if you're going to tell me, mikame diktaktush, if you're going to say they came before the mincha was sanctified, in other words, that's when it's placed in the ministering vessels. Look what it says in the footnote. Like every other mincha offering, the mincha sota, every mincha does this, goes through two stages of sanctification before it is offered. It first receives verbal sanctification when the owner dedicates the ingredients for use as a mincha. If I say, I hereby am going to give a mincha, here's a pound of flour, here's a little bit of oil, I'm dedicating this all for a mincha. At that point, when I opened up my mouth, it is sanctified. However, it's only sanctified to the point that if I change my mind or whatever, I can now exchange it. And I can not use it, and I can give money instead. Because it hasn't gone to the second stage of sanctification. In other words, it's designated as a sanctification of designation. That can be changed, meaning to say you can exchange it and say, you know what, I changed my mind, but here I'm going to give money instead of it, so the base of mincha doesn't lose out on any money. Right? At this point, the mincha is invested with only what we call monetary sanctity, which can be redeemed. The mincha then is placed in a kli shares, a service vessel, investing it with physical sanctity, which cannot be redeemed. So there's two types of sanctity. When I verbalize and say, this is going to be a mincha, now there's a monetary issue. I have now taken, I'm saying, I'm giving the money's worth of this flour, and I'm going to give flour. If I want to back out, the Beis Midrash can't lose out on the money. You have to give the money, but you can redeem. Once it goes in the vessel, then that very flour is holy itself, not just its monetary values. Wow. So that's the thing. So now when do these witnesses come? Is it when they just said, okay, here's the flour, and I'm going to make it as a mincha, but I haven't put it yet into the vessels? Well, would we then say you burn it? Why do you have to burn it? It can't be redeemed. Tepuk l'chulin. Let it go out to a non-sanctified state through redemption. You know, obviously that's not the case. Obviously, she can't bring the mincha anymore. Let's say she says, okay, here's my flour. It's right over here. I'm ready to give it. I'm giving it to the base of mincha. But she didn't put it in the vessel. Witnesses come. She's tamea. Finish. Game over. We're not going to burn it. But what are you going to do with the flour over here? Not a problem. Why waste it? Why throw it away? The flour is not invested with holiness. Just as monetary holiness. So she'll have to give $10, whatever, replace it, give that to the Beis HaMikdash, and now she could take the flour home. So that can't be the case, but the Mishnah says it's a case where you burn it. So what's the case when you burn it? Ella what? You must say, Labasar the Kaddish. After it was sanctified, after it was put in the vessel, and once it's in the vessel, now it is holy, and now there's nothing else you could do. So look, in the present case, the offering of the mincha sota cannot proceed because its sole purpose is to allow for the sota's examination. Guilt has already been established. If it is also not fit for a voluntary mincha, since a barley mincha, it's a barley mincha, by the way, it's a barley mincha, is fit to be offered only as a mincha sota. So there's nothing else we can do. So therefore, you got to burn it. In other words, sometimes, let's forget about a sota. Let's say you put flour and you put it into the bowl, and for some reason, you can't bring this mincha. But guess what? You could redeem it as another mincha for a different korban. Because a flour one can be done with a number of holy activities.
Once you put it in the kli already?
Yeah, you could use it for something else that's holy. It's holy, okay. So I can do it for another holy thing.
Okay.
Right? But hers is a barley offering. That's the only mincha that's a barley, except the one we bring on Shavuos, only once a year. So there's nothing we can do with it. It's holy. You can't redeem it. You can't use it as another mincha. So now the only choice is to burn it. So now let's think for a minute. Okay, so that's the case. The case is you've put the barley in the vessel. It is sanctified. Now two witnesses come and say that she is guilty. Now that she is guilty, we stop the procedure. What are we going to do with this barley? There's nothing we can do. We can't redeem it. We can't use it for another offering. We have to burn it. That is the case. So now comes the question. If you're going to say, like the opinion of Rav Yosef, who argues on Rav Sheshes, that Mayim Bot Gosa, if you say that waters would examine, remember, this is the whole argument, if the witnesses are overseas, will the water work or not? If you say witnesses are overseas and they still check the water, so then we're okay. Alma we see Bas Mikdash Umikrafi. So accordingly, the mincha is eligible to be sanctified and offered on the altar despite the existence of these witnesses.
Because we're not aware of them.
In other words, the case like this, what if there were witnesses we're not aware of, right? What will the water still work?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so now, even if we put the barley in here,
yes,
right, the water would still work, right?
You said there are witnesses overseas that we're not aware of.
Right.
The water won't work.
Rav Yosef, it does. That's the machlokes.
Yeah.
Rav Yosef says it does. Rav Sheshes says it does.
No. Okay.
So according to him, he says. So what does that mean exactly? So let's go through the story here. She was warned. There was seclusion, and then in the seclusion, happened to be two witnesses who saw. Then they went to China. Now the water will still
work.
Right. It will still work according to Rav Yosef. It still works. Okay, now, we don't know that they're there yet.
No.
Now we go to Beis HaMikdash, she's going to there, we want to give her to drink the water, we go and put flour in there, we put it, it's in the bowl, it's sanctified, and everything. Okay, so now all of a sudden, two other witnesses come.
Okay.
Sorry, we got to burn it. We got to burn it because it was sanctified, right? Hey, wait a minute, why was it sanctified? There were two witnesses already who saw it. Yeah, but even if the witnesses saw it, the waters would still work. So even if there could have been two witnesses in another country, still we would have to burn this because when it was sanctified because we were thinking she could really still drink it. V'chi kodesh, and when we sanctified it, mikar, originally when we put it in the utensil, even if there were two witnesses somewhere else who saw, but according to Rabbi Yosef, the waters will still work, shaper kodesh. It's still a valid sanctity because the fact that two witnesses saw it that we don't know about won't change it. Therefore, what's my choice? What can I do with this offering now that another two witnesses come? Minchas and Nisrafes. The mincha's burned when the witnesses come and halt the procedure, because by halting the procedure, they're disqualifying a mincha that had validity. Again, important note. When the mincha was placed in the kli sharis, in the ministering utensil, prior to the coming witness, the sota was still in a state of doubt, and the bitter waters would ascertain her status. Even though there were witnesses who saw it, because according to Rav Yosef, the waters still work. The mincha was thus fit to function as a prerequisite for the sota's test, and was fit for the kli sharis, whose sanctification was therefore valid. Now, let's say those same witnesses from China now come back before she drinks the water. If the witnesses come afterward, the validly sanctified mincha becomes disqualified only from this point forward. It cannot revert to a state of non-sanctity and must be burned. That's all good. If you hold it, if witnesses see it, it doesn't change the function of the water. Ella, but if you hold like Rav Sheshes, Yamar Ein HaMayim Bo Kinosa, if you're going to say that the waters don't examine her, if there were witnesses who saw it, that means really this water really is not going to work. Right? We don't know that yet.
No.
We don't know that yet. But if there are witnesses who saw it, it's not going to work. So when the flour is put in that vessel, really, 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 was it really sanctified? No, because she was really never going to drink the water according to the true reality. But we don't know that yet. We think it's holy. But the waters really aren't going to work. We don't know they're not going to work yet, right? But now if those witnesses now come, Tigloi Milsum Afreya, once the witnesses do arrive, the matter becomes revealed retroactively that really, you know, let's say two witnesses come in front of us and say she's Tumei before we do anything. Would we go make a flower offering?
No.
Never. We just didn't know that fact. So retroactively we find out, Dichi Kodesh Meikar, when it was originally sanctified and put in, Bitos Kodesh, it was erroneously made holy. Right? Since we now know the woman was never fit to be tested. Here's the point. Look in the footnote. If we accept Rashi's ruling that the bitter waters are ineffective when there are witnesses who know of her guilt, it emerges that this woman was never eligible to be tested by the bitter waters. The mincha would thus never receive a valid sanctification in the Kli Sharis, since the Kli Sharis invests with holiness only those things that are fit for it. Since it emerges that this mincha was never fit for the Kli Sharis, the mincha never became sanctified. If it never became sanctified, what could we do with the flour, with the barley?
Burn it.
No! Why do you have to burn it? It never was holy to begin with. We thought it was holy.
Yeah.
But when the witnesses come, we know retroactively never was holy. So why does the Mishnah say you have to burn it? V'tepek l'chulin. Why don't we just exchange it and it's not sanctified? Matter of fact, you don't even need to redeem it. Because it never was holy to begin with. A holiness of mistake. Look at 10. For since both the verbal and physical sanctification were done on the false premise that the woman required a mincha, the ingredient should be treated as ordinary and non-sacred even without redemption. This is in keeping with the principle that erroneous consecration is not consecration. So according to Rav Sheshes, why does the Mishnah say when two witnesses come afterwards, after the thing is put into the Kli Sharis? Now think about this. Think about this clearly, guys. Whenever two witnesses, now look at the order. You see the logic here? The husband warns her. She goes into seclusion. Right now, we don't have any witnesses.
Right.
But the truth is, there were witnesses, but we don't know.
We don't know about them.
Okay? Now, we go to the Beis HaMikdash. We put barley into the vessel. And now we think it's sanctified. Now,
Now,
if two witnesses come, what are they saying exactly? We saw that she was Matama herself. Now, they didn't have to even be overseas for that matter.
Yeah.
But once the two witnesses come, according to Rav Sheshes, would the waters have ever worked?
No.
According to Rav Sheshes, would the waters, if there are two witnesses, we'll say, but we don't know about them.
According to Rav Sheshes.
Yeah, well, that's who we're asking on.
Yeah, okay,
we're trying to disprove him.
Yeah.
So when we put it in, we thought it was holy, because we didn't know there was anybody else. When those two witnesses come, what are they telling us? We saw originally when she was in seclusion that she was Tamea. That means everything we did was useless. There's no need to do it. Retroactively, we know there was never a doubt. The flour, the barley that was put in that thing should never have been put in there.
Right.
It really retroactively was never sanctified. So why does the Mishnah say you have to burn it? If you hold like Rabbi Yosef, who argues and says if the witnesses see the waters still work,
yeah.
So what does it matter if the witnesses come later? When the mincha was put in, she would still get killed if they wouldn't have come.
Right.
Therefore, it's sanctified. We don't make her drink because now we know the truth, but it was actually sanctified. Had the witnesses not come, the water would have worked,
right,
according to Rav Yosef. The question on Rav Sheshes, how do you understand the Mishnah? Because if witnesses are coming back, it retroactively means the water never worked, it never became holy, and why do I got to burn it? Great question. So let's just do the answer, and then we'll be finished. Amar Rav Yehuda me diskera. Rav Yehuda from a place called Diskarta, he answers the following very strange answer. Well, there's only one way we can work this out, guys. You know, you're assuming that the witnesses said that she was defiled in that hotel when they were alone. There's another possibility. It could be when she was in the hotel, she wasn't defiled yet. And what are these witnesses testifying? That she got said she defiled herself after the seclusion, but before she drank the water. And when can that be? They testify, she committed adultery in the temple courtyard.
Oh.
In other words, the husband brings her to the Beis HaMikdash.
Oh.
Beis HaMikdash is a big place, man. It's not just a little place. It's got lots of rooms. She's a very active woman. She starts engaging a guest there, and you know, when nobody's looking, she slips slips into one of the private rooms. So in other words, they put the flour in the bowl, and she was still okay. After they put the flour in the bowl, she says, "I gotta go to the bathroom." She goes to the bathroom. Oh, if it meets a handsome coin or whatever, hey, come on, let's do a little this. And then there were witnesses to that. So then we have to burn it.
She has to be warned about that particular guy.
I understand. No. She was warned. Right. But guess what? If this woman decides to fool around with anybody else afterwards, she's not going to drink the water either. She's already ushered to her husband.
Well, I know, but the whole sort of thing.
Yeah, the process is interrupted by something.
So fine.
She's not worried about this guy she just meets at the...
She wasn't. But two witnesses, now listen what happened. She was warned, she was in seclusion, we have no proof. There's no witnesses who saw anything. But we go to the base of, there was no witnesses.
Person.
Right. Now we go to the base of Migdash, okay, we're taking the flour, we're putting it in the bowl.
Yeah.
Now is that flour sanctified?
Yes.
Now, says nothing can change that, right?
Right.
Now, before, from that time on, still a lot more has to happen. They have to write a whole thing up, parchment, it takes time.
Yeah.
So she's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. She goes to the bathroom. She's mizana with another guy. And two guys happen to watch her and saw what happened. They come rushing out, say, hey, look, this woman says, now, of course, forget about the previous things. She's ushered her husband out because of the other guy.
Yeah.
Finished. No need to drink the waters anymore. I don't care if she was guilty about the first thing. She now can't be with her husband. So that's going to have to be the case, a bit of a far-fetched case. And it comes out, the Ki Kaddish, when the flour was first put in Mi'ikara, Shaper Kaddish. It was very holy.
Yeah,
but the problem is, things happened later.
Right.
Things happened later, it's a problem. Where it says, hold on, wait a minute, you're going to tell me that she was Mizana in the Beis HaMikdash?
Yeah.
Maskev Lavra Mishash, Rishash, yes. Wait a minute, there's all kinds of people over there to make sure this doesn't happen. Hello, Pirchei Kehunim Alavna. So, isn't she escorted by the Kohanim? We don't leave her alone for a minute.
Yeah.
When she's there, she's under 24-hour surveillance. How can you tell me she had the opportunity to go fool around while she's in the Azara? You know what the Gemara's going to answer?
The young
Kohanim. Yeah. So she fooled around with one of the Kohanim.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is a very, you know, did it. Or we could say Ravashi can answer a different answer. Kigon, Shinitzel, she had to go to the bathroom. So the Otu Pirche Kuna Bekipato, you think the Kohanim are hanging over her like a head covering and they go with her into the bathroom? That far you don't go. So she says you go to the bathroom and she did it there. Okay, those are possible answers, but that's really extenuating circumstance. A very big dochik answer. So Rav Papa says, let me give you an answer that's not so dochik. Let's come back. Forget about this. I'm going to give you another answer that'll be a little bit more plausible. Rav Papa Amar Rav Papa says, no, Liolam Keramina Nikar. We could say, like we said before, that it was really this very witnesses who saw that she defiled herself in the seclusion the very first time. It's like we said, you had a question when we find out she never really had a drink from it. I Udika Amrit, Tape Chulin. So you said, well, let's take it out for Chulin. Really, it was never Kodesh to begin with, right? It never really, when we put it in retroactively, she never could have drunk the water. It says, you're absolutely correct, and you're right, and 100% is so. But guess what? The Mishnah says you burn it because of rabbinic fence, so we won't make a mistake. How's it going to look if you put flour into a holy ministering vessel, and all of a sudden, what do you say? You know, you can now use it for a mundane thing. Now, people aren't going to know all the sophisticated stuff that we've been learning for the last 3 days. That the witnesses came and the waters don't check and this and that. A common, simple local is in the base of Migdash. He sees a coin putting flour in the thing, and the next minute, it's not used for this korban. The guy can use it wherever he wants. What are they going to think? That I guess if you put it in the holy vessels, it doesn't do anything to it. People would just... You're right. According to the law, you could do whatever you want with it. It never was holy. But what a commoner who doesn't know all the details, he's going to just see it. Flour is put in a special bowl, and look what happened. They didn't bring it as a korban, and somebody had breakfast, had Cheerios and milk with this. They're going to think you can do this all the time. So therefore, mid the Rabbanan, rabbinically, Xera made a decree to burn it, although you don't need to burn it. But here's where a rabbinic decree would be very nice. Shema Yomru, because people could mistakenly think, Motzi Miklisharis, whenever you take any time out of a sanctified vessel, Lachol, it can lose its sanctity totally, which would be incorrect in any other situation. You're right, in this situation, you're correct. But then people will mistaken it in another situation. That's what he says. Not everyone is knowledgeable enough to know that the mere existence of witnesses who have seen or become defiled negates the effectiveness of the soda procedure. Not everybody knows that, and thus invalidates the sanctification of mincha. So what are they seeing? Thus, when they see that the mincha is being treated as ordinary food, they'll mistakenly conclude that an offering can be deconsecrated even after it's been consecrated. To prevent this misconception, the rabbis decreed that the mincha that has been sanctified in a klisharis be burnt, even though the mincha is not sacred at all on a biblical level, even though you really don't need to burn it, but they burn it so people will not make the mistake. And there's no question. So on Monday, there's going to be one more question on Rav Sheshes and one more answer, and that will be the end of the sugya, and then we'll...